This is Anna Hartley on Friday the 14th of February 2025 for the Stories of the Docks Project. Could I ask you to tell us your name and your year of birth?
My name's Gordon Wilson and I was born in 1954.
And could you tell me about your family history in the fishing industry or your links to Grimsby Docks?
My stepfather was a fisherman in Grimsby for most of his working life. He arrived here in about 1956 from Fleetwood, where he'd been fishing before. He was from Ireland originally, but had found his way to Fleetwood. And we came here about 1956, and he fished until the 80s. When of course he joined the long line of last fisherman redundancies.
And could you tell me about your experiences or your memories of the docks?
My first experience of the docks is, I'm not exactly sure about the date, but it's about 1959, about 1960. I know that because it was before I could swim. The reason I know that is because Steve-O, who was a lodger of ours and a fisherman, was looking after me. Dad must have been at sea. Mum would have been working at what was then Eskimo and then became Findus. And he was looking after me for the day and he took me on the dock. My earliest recollection is of walking across the pontoon with him, a very, very slippery surface, as the lumpers marched across and around in their clogs, clattering, and I remember him telling me to be careful because it was slippery, and it was quite unnerving. But somehow I made it across the dock and onto the trawler in which he was working. I think they must have finished unloading, and I remember standing in the middle of the deck while he was trimming something. It was either ice or coal. Strangely, I can't remember which. But I remember standing there just watching in this sort of all of this business going on around me, and the ship started to move, and I was terrified, and I was convinced he was taking me off to sea to Iceland or somewhere. The reality is, I imagined that the ship was moving across to the North Wall, where it would wait until it was ready to sail. Whether it was before we went on the dock or afterwards, I can't remember, but Steve-O took me swimming to the Orwell Street swimming baths, where he parked me at one end while he went for a swim. And one of my strongest childhood memories is of trying to get out. There were no steps, so I was sort of hanging on to the rail and trying to get out, swinging a foot over onto the side to pull myself out. That's how I know that I was under seven, because I'd learnt to swim when I was about seven. So it was before 1961. So that was my first experience on Dockland.
And could I ask you to describe what the atmosphere was like down the docks?
At that time, I didn't notice anything at that time, but I've actually only gone onto the docks while Dad was fishing. We would go down to see him through the lock pits. So it would tend to be a bit on the quiet side there, because quite often if I was down there, it was because he was coming in dock late at night. So it would be standing by the lock pits watching the boat coming in. That was one of the other scary experiences I had. I remember one day standing there watching the tug bring it. He must have been on one of the bigger trawlers at the time, because it was a tug assisted arrival, and the tug had misread the gate opening, and the tug was actually in the lock pit itself as the trawler was coming up behind, and of course the motion brought him in. The lock pits hadn't opened, became a tight squeeze in there, and the line that was connecting the tug and the trawler became very, very taut. I remember seeing tug operators getting on the floor in case it snapped. I don't know what happened. I think the gate must have opened, the tension released, and the tug got in. But that was quite unnerving as well. Another nighttime visit. Dad would always ring ahead to tell Mum what time he was going to be in, whether he was going to be early through the gates or late, and she would drive down to collect him. And now and again, he would say, "Bring Gordon with you." Now, we both knew what that meant. That meant that I was going to be going on the ship and coming off it with Bond, with the goods that the fishermen were only entitled to so much duty-free Bond. And therefore, it would usually mean that Dad had got an extra pile of cider, and I would be posing as a deckhand coming off with it, perhaps a crate of beer, or it might have been a couple of bottles. And my strongest memory of that incident was climbing off the boat, coming shoreside, and the rummagers, the customs officers, were on the deck, on the dock side, looking on, and I was absolutely convinced that they were going to stop and talk to me and check on who I was, but it didn't happen. And the greatest irony was an old school friend was a customs officer, and she was actually part of the rummage that day, so she knew what was going on. But no interference took place. The crate of beer found its way home safely.
And was that a regular occurrence?
No, it didn't happen all that often. Well, having said that, because I wouldn't have always been at home when he was due to dock. But there were various sort of customs-related stories that you'd be able to hear from all manner of people. But that was my one direct experience of it. I do have one early memory of atmosphere on the docks. It wasn't unusual for school parties to go down and witness the fish sale in the morning. I don't suppose we were there for the early part of the market. That must have been far too early for junior school kids to get there. But I went there with a trip from St Mary's, and we were given a tour of the North Wall, and we saw all the trawlers lined up ready to sail. And we were brought onto the pontoon then as well, or at least we stood by the pontoon that day. Unlike my Steve-O trip, we weren't on it, we were beside it. And I remember the teacher, the detainers, Mr. Merry, he'd managed to get one of the fish merchants or something to talk to us about the process of the sale and the market and what was going on. I remember the fish merchant asking us if we knew what kind of fish this was. And I, the son of the fisherman, got it wrong. I shouted out, they were herring. And Mr. Merry was very embarrassed that one of his boys had been so stupid and mistaken a haddock or a cod for a herring, and he told me so as well. But that was a hectic time. I remember I don't remember the trains being there. I think the fish trains may have come to an end around that time, but I remember seeing the railway lines and imagining the trains coming in to take the fish away. But that's it, I think, on atmosphere.
When you went down there as part of your school trip, do you remember if it was busy at that time?
It would have been, because it was certainly, we were back at school by 9 o'clock. It was an earlier than school day start. That would have been the only time that I saw barrow boys at work. You know, there would have been that busyness, and those little vehicles that they used to, I don't know what they were called, little mobile vehicles that dragged a little train of kits of fish behind them. So I remember that going on. And I suppose in my Steve-O experience on the pontoon, yes, I remember being surrounded by these giants in wooden shoes who were clattering about at great speed, it seemed to me, and seeing the swinging of the baskets of fish as they came from the deck to the dock side. That was possibly the one time I experienced the docks at its busiest. But when I was at my junior school trip, it's all vague. But that first one with Stephen, that was exciting. Scary.
What was exciting about it?
I think it was I think I've just said that they appeared to be giants, and there was these great mysterious goings on. The noise, I don't know what the noise was, but it would have been human voices, and it was cold and smelly. Smelly in terms of, you know, fresh or just thawing fish coming out of the hold. And maybe even the colours. I mean, the slippery the slippery base of the dockside and the iridescence in the slime and the oil and the ice and the fish oil would have. That's all. The sort of thing that Dale Mackey captures wonderfully in his painting was there in reality for me then.
And do you have any experience of actually working on the docks?
Not on the fish dock. My first full-time job before going off to teacher training college was working at the Findus No. 6 coal store, which was at the end of Wickham Road. So I did for 6 weeks enjoy the experience of crossing Humber Street Bridge and sort of walking past Ross House on my way down to the end of what seemed to be an eternally long road to get to the coal store, where I spent most of the summer baling cardboard boxes. But occasionally we'd get to get into the back of the containers of the Continental trucks that came over, mostly Danish, I seem to remember, because they used to bring dodgy magazines over that weren't freely available in the 1970s in Grimsby newsagents. But two experiences there. The regular workers were very good with we students, who of course weren't paying any tax because we didn't earn enough, and therefore I think I was earning, this is 1972, I think my weekly wage was about £85, which was very, very good. Because, you know, they didn't care that we weren't earning £85 52 weeks of the year. You know. But I know that some workers were very resistant to student presence because they saw it as, I think, boys on the make. But the team at Findus No. 6 were very, very good. And they held us in great affection, so much so that on my last day, while unloading it was all in boxes, but a group of the guys came in, grabbed hold of me, tied me down onto a forklift truck, stripped me to the waist, decorated me in magic marker, and then took me for a quick ride through the ice house. We're talking about temperatures 30 below, 30 to 40 below. It was very quick, they were very considerate then. Quick whisk round, and then as we were coming out, I remember feeling the warmth of that August sunshine coming through the doors, and then the shock of getting a box of snow dropped on me before I came out. And then they were very, very kind. I didn't do any more work for the rest of the day. They took me down to the canteen, wrapped me up, fed me, and that's possibly my most memorable experience of dockland life. They weren't so kind to their own colleagues. One of the guys in the team was due to get married, and he didn't turn up for work one morning because the night before they'd taken him on his stag do, and they'd tied him up and fastened him to the bollards at Ryby Square. So he'd been there until the police came and released him. But I suppose that's the kind of jape that workers used to do to each other. That was the spirit of the place, certainly. It was a great, great time to work, great place to work, great team. I enjoyed that very much.
And could you tell me about a best memory or some of your highlights from your experiences on the dock?
I think I've probably already done that. I think it's that first visit with Steve-O, probably. It was a very moving one, though, and one that's made me think about the town a lot since. I mentioned that my family were from Fleetwood. I'm from a pioneering Fleetwood fishing family, you know, one of the first families to settle that port in the 1840s. And what family I have left is still over there. Auntie Lillian, who was the mother of my six cousins, came over to visit once, and Dad was due in, so we took her onto the dock, stood by the lockpit to see him coming in. And she turned to me and she said, "They're a bit serious, aren't they?" And I said, "Don't you?" She said, "All these folk round here, they're just looking real grim, and them men on that deck," he said, "they're just looking fierce." She said, "If this were Fleetwood, they'd all be laughing and dancing and joking." And she's true, you know, in Fleetwood, you don't go onto the dock to see the man coming home. You can actually stand on the seafront because the trawlers have to come so close to the promenade to get into the River Wye where the dock is that they would go and meet them there. The Fleetwood Fishing Memorial is a woman with a girl and the family dog waving and laughing at the trawlers as they come in. Auntie Lillian said, this is our town, this. And I've often thought about our fishing memorial, which is about strength and power and hard labour and the seriousness of those men on the trawler that my Auntie Lil noticed, and reflect on that with what seemed to me a much gentler experience on the West Coast. And yet they're all involved in possibly the toughest job in the world.
Why do you think here in Grimsby we have a different...
I don't think we do, but that was her perception. That was what she felt. I'm sure there's no difference at all. It doesn't matter whether you sail on a trawler from Grimsby Hull, Aberdeen, Fleetwood, Lowestoft, wherever. But the traditions seem to leave a different memory. I don't understand it. I don't believe it. I don't believe that it's different, but what evidence there is appears to be slightly different.
And what do you think is important for the younger generation to learn or to understand about the docks?
I think it's important that a town that owes most of its experience to that 130-year period as a premier fishing port needs to be preserved. And I think the fabric of what's left is in need of some kind of rescue act. I think what's planned for the Casbah and the docks is absolutely essential. I just hope that it's fully realised. Most of the buildings have gone. Most all of the ships have gone. I think that those curing houses that are still working, the ones that are being reopened, I think that's excellent news. I think those buildings that are being preserved, I just hope that enough people see the purpose of preserving that it does continue, that the pontoon as it survives needs to be preserved. Whatever you do with it, you may want to, it may turn into a performance space, or it might be sort of arts and crafts or traditional workshops there, to keep alive the memory of what made the town so important and so significant.